Hi, and welcome to the second episode of the Intrepid Christianity podcast. I'm your host, Josh Mitchell. The mission here at Intrepid Christianity is to encourage and uplift Christians to embrace the adventure of the call of God on your life. It's my passion and desire to see Christians really fulfill the purpose that God has for you. Before we get into this week's episode, I have a brief announcement to make, and that is that we are now connected on Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music. So if you use any of these services to get your usual podcast goodness, then you can look up Intrepid Christianity and subscribe to be notified every week when the latest episode is online. Along with that, I'll hopefully have some more progress on our website completed by next week, which will include an email list. So if you prefer to be notified by email, that opportunity will be available as well. So the short version of all this is that things are slowly getting organized. Most importantly though, don't forget to look Intrepid Christianity up on Facebook and Instagram, give us a like or a follow, and stay up to date with everything going on during the week as well. Now with all that out of the way, let's get into today's episode. So today I want to look at a passage in the Old Testament that was one of the defining Bible stories of my vision into this journey of intrepid Christianity. It happens in 1 Samuel, and it's about Jonathan, the son of King Saul, and his armor bearer sneaking off from the Israelite army and basically causing complete chaos in the camp of their enemies, the Philistines. So we're going to read from 1 Samuel chapter 14, verses 1 to 15. One day, Jonathan the son of Saul said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the Philistine garrison on the other side." But he did not tell his father. Saul was staying in the outskirts of Gibeah in the pomegranate cave at Migron. The people who were with him were about 600 men, including Ahijah the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, son of Phinehas, son of Eli, the priest of the Lord in Shiloh, wearing an ephod. And the people did not know that Jonathan had gone. Within the passes by which Jonathan sought to go over to the Philistine garrison, there was a rocky crag on the one side and a rocky crag on the other side. The name of the one was Bozez and the name of the other Sene. The one crag rose on the north in front of Michmash and the other on the south in front of Geba. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you heart and soul." Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men, and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place, and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be the sign to us." So both of them showed themselves to the garrison of the Philistines. And the Philistines said, "Look, Hebrews are coming out of the holes where they have hidden themselves." And the men of the garrison hailed Jonathan and his armor bearer and said, "Come up to us, and we will show you a thing." And Jonathan said to his armor bearer, "Come up after me, for the Lord has given them into the hand of Israel." Then Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, and his armor bearer after him. And they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed them after him. And that first strike which Jonathan and his armor bearer made killed about 20 men within, as if it were half a furrow's length in an acre of land. And there was a panic in the camp, in the field, and among all the people. The garrison and even the raiders trembled. The earth quaked, and it became a very great panic. So the nations of Israel and Philistia are at war with one another. Not long before this all happens, King Saul decided to go gather a group of Israelites to go into battle. Jonathan led an attack on a Philistine garrison, which he won, and Saul used this victory to try and get everyone together. After all, there's nothing like a good war to unify the people of a nation. Turned out though that this was just poking the bear, and the Philistines gathered their whole army together and started coming towards Israel. Saul wanted to get God on his side, so even though he'd been told to wait for Samuel before making a sacrifice, he didn't. He saw the people around him, they were starting to lose confidence and beginning to make their way back home, so he decided to hold the sacrifice himself, something that Samuel was less than pleased about when he did show up. So now the Philistines are on the edge of the battlefield, camped out on one side. Israelites, well, we've got 600 of them. They're hiding while Saul tries to figure out how he can get out of this. And in the middle of all this, Jonathan gets bored. Now, there's a couple of characteristics that we can see in Jonathan's behavior and actions throughout this passage that align really well with the philosophy of intrepid Christianity. The very first part of that is he's moving. He actually gets up and does something. While Saul is sulking and trying to work out what the next step is, now that he's completely made a mess of things, Jonathan makes a decision. He gets up. When I use the term, think about the word intrepid, one of the first words that comes to mind is adventure. The essence of the intrepid Christianity is one of adventure. And if you've watched a very popular series of fantasy movies over the past 20 years, perhaps one of the first images that comes to mind from here is of a small statured individual, backpack on his back, staff in hand, running off into the sunset yelling, "I'm going on an adventure!" If you haven't, I'm talking about Bilbo Baggins. But that's at the heart of an adventure, isn't it? That journey. No one's really ever thinking that they're going to have much of an adventure sitting on the couch in your lounge room at home. Generally, if you think about adventure, you're thinking about wilderness, of the natural world, uncharted and untouched by humanity. The dictionary calls it an unusual and exciting or daring experience. And we picture Saul in the story. He's just sitting in a cave. He's even summoned the priestly option in Ahijah, who's turned up wearing the ephod, which is a part of the Jewish religion tradition that is used for seeking God's will. So it kind of suggests that Saul has basically decided, in order to make sure he doesn't mess up again, he's just going to sit still and wait for God to tell him what to do. He's waiting for a sign. While he's doing that, Jonathan, he's decided to go off and see what's what. He's not content to sit back and wait, but rather he's going to seek things out, to keep moving, to stay on the journey. It's really easy to get bogged down when we decide that we're going to wait for God, when sometimes it turns out he's just waiting for us to get up and walk out the front door. Now, yes, there are times that we need to pause, we need to rest, especially when we need healing or recovery. But Jesus did ultimately call us to follow him. And before it became a term associated with just watching what someone else posts on social media, the term follow actually implied movement. You can't follow a stationary object. Now, I want to suggest something that might be a little bit controversial to some people, but this is something God's really imprinted on me over the years. And that's that we aren't designed to sit around and wait for God to tell us what to do next. We're designed to be on the move, exploring the world around us, letting him work through us. If you start walking, God starts lighting the way for you. Psalm 119, verse 105 says that his word is a lamp to our feet and a light to our path. And again, we're seeing this allusion to movement. A path is not usually a place that you rest. A path is the road you travel when you're journeying. Your feet for moving. You may stand still, but if you're standing, you're generally in that step of being ready to move, if not moving already. So step one, start moving. It is a lot easier to steer a moving object than a stationary one. I just want to read verse 6 of this chapter again. Jonathan said to the young man who carried his armor, "Come, let us go over to the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for nothing can hinder the Lord from saving by many or by few." This is actually one of my favorite Bible verses. Jonathan's effectively saying to his armor bearer, "You know what? Let's go over there and see if God shows up." Now, what we find is that It's all well and good to be on the move, but the next challenge is actually moving in the right direction. When Jonathan leaned over to his armor bearer in the cave and said, "Hey, you know what, let's go over and see what's happening over at the Philistine camp," he may or may not at that point have been expecting to wade into battle, two men against however many enemies there were. What he did have though was a direction, and from there it was about what God was going to do. Sometimes we can get so caught up wanting to know God's plans for our lives that we don't go anywhere. Like Saul, we're sitting in the cave waiting for this full plan, waiting for, you know, a five-year agenda that's going to step out from beginning to end what the next stage of our life's going to be. And at the same time, God's just standing on the other side of the cave entrance going, "Hey, just come out here. Just start walking. We'll get the rest of it sorted out once you're on the way." God's plan is often just for you to start walking, and he'll reveal the rest as you get close enough to that point. You've probably been asked the question at some point, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? I like to ask this question a little bit differently, and that's to ask, what would you do if you knew that God was going to show up and ensure you succeeded? Psalm 139 tells us, "For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. I praise you, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are your works. My soul knows it very well. My frame was not hidden from you when I was being made in secret, intricately woven in the depths of the earth. Your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them." There's a passion inside you, a desire, an urge, a dream. That one thing you'd do if you had the choice to do anything. And what if I told you that God had designed you with that passion for a purpose? A few years ago, I found some of my old school report cards that my parents had kept from childhood. Kept everything right back to kindergarten. And one of the comments on that kindergarten report card was that whenever we had story time, I would interrupt, predicting about how the story was going to go and how things were going to end. From a young age, I adored books right from the start, the moment I could start reading. I loved reading, I loved stories, I loved storytelling. And it's this innate part of me that I just can't switch off. It makes watching TV and movies absolute hell, but it gives me motivation, it gives me drive, it gives me inspiration. I'm a storyteller, a writer, a communicator. So I started writing. It's what got me here talking to you. I might not be writing fiction right now, but it's still communicating a message. And when I'm sitting at my computer or at a notebook with a pen, some chill music playing in the background, a cup of coffee in my hand, it's one of the most peaceful or content places that I can be. So what's that thing for you? Because if God designed you with a specific passion, with particular desires, with a clear dream, then perhaps that's a hint to the direction you need to be moving in. So what happens if you decide to take this and then implement Jonathan's philosophy? All right, I'm just going to start walking in that direction, and it may be that God will work for me and open some doors. As we read on, we see Jonathan start to realize what's happening here. There's a momentary pause. I'm going to call it a wise pause. Then Jonathan said, "Behold, we will cross over to the men and we will show ourselves to them. If they say to us, 'Wait until we come to you,' then we will stand still in our place and we will not go up to them. But if they say, 'Come up to us,' then we will go up, for the Lord has given them into our hand, and this shall be a sign to us." Have you ever driven a car that needed a wheel alignment? If you let go of the steering wheel while moving, it'll start veering to the left or the right. You need to be sure that you're maintaining control of the direction and so that you don't run off the road. This becomes even more pronounced if you're traveling somewhere that you don't have a specific road to get from point A to point B. Coming back to the adventure analogy, oftentimes when we think about an adventure, the path tends to be unclear. Even if we know the destination, We may not know exactly how we're going to get there or what challenges might stand in between our starting point and the end point. So we need to be constantly course correcting. We need to continually confirm that we're still heading in the right direction. And it's at this point in the story that Jonathan's probably got a pretty good idea of what's to come, even if he didn't know what was going on as soon as he left the cave. Now that he's here, he knows there's likely to be some sort of conflict on the cards. But he's not about to charge in recklessly. There's options here. Does he try to drag a few of them down here to where he's standing, or does he keep going and fight them in their own camp? I've found myself at times that I can ask God for a sign and he doesn't always give me one. Now, usually I find that's because I'm actually just looking for reassurance or perhaps looking for a reason to not go down a road that I find uncomfortable. And we can spend a lot of time arguing with God if we really want to. But there are other times when he'll give us something really clear. In this case, Jonathan wasn't looking for reassurance. He wasn't looking for a way out. He was pretty much ready to go. Note that he didn't say, if they say to us, wait until we come down to you, then we'll run for our lives back to camp. He might have been just as happy to fight them down here and it was just sitting out the battle. He may also have felt that if they did start coming down, okay, that's our time to regroup. But he wasn't stopping unless God gave him a sign to do so. What he did was to seek confirmation. He checked his course, made sure that he was still pointed in the right direction by seeking that momentary guidance from God. And what happened? God showed up. Scripture says that Jonathan climbed up on his hands and feet, so it was a pretty tough effort. If you've never seen The Princess Bride, then I absolutely encourage you to do so because you're missing out. Also, if you haven't, spoiler alert, there's a scene in this movie where the protagonist has to climb a cliff to the man he's going to have to fight in a duel. However, he's hesitant for obvious reasons. He thinks this guy's going to kill him while he's trying to climb up. There's some back and forth until eventually the man on the clifftop finally convinces our hero that he will reach the top alive. So he climbs up, and not only does his opponent stay true to his word, but allows the protagonist time to rest and recuperate from the climb before they do battle, leading to what is arguably one of the best sword fight scenes in movie history. Now, I only bring this up to say that I very much doubt the Philistines were being this generous to Jonathan. But Jonathan does get to the top, and they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer killed them after him. The final point here is that Jonathan never looked back. He still didn't stop moving forward, even as he got to the top of that hill and started actually fighting these guys. He trusted his armored bearer had his back, and he just kept moving forward, one step after another. Movement, direction, confirmation, continuation. Jonathan was moving. He knew the direction that he was going in. He confirmed God's plan, and he continued walking in it and did not look back. That is, to me, the way of walking in God's calling on our life. Now, just before I finish up for this week, I want to quickly step back to verse 7. And his armor bearer said to him, "Do all that is in your heart. Do as you wish. Behold, I am with you heart and soul." As you step out and follow God's plan on your life, embracing the adventure, the journey, you will inspire those around you. Part of being a disciple of Jesus is discipling others, aiding those around us to find their own destiny in God's calling for their lives. So that's it for this week. I hope you've enjoyed this little discussion around what is one of my favorite Bible stories. If you're getting value out of these podcasts, then please can I encourage you to share them with your own social circles. You can follow Intrepid Christianity on Facebook or Instagram to ensure that you're alerted when each new podcast goes live, or you can subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or Amazon Music Podcasts. If you are subscribed, it would also be really helpful if you were able to leave a rating or a review as well. Otherwise, may God bless you, and I will talk to you next week.